Yeah, Fletch said, me. You got insurance? Sure. Want to check your coverage? Gotta have the truck, Fletch said. Whether insurance covers it or not, can't use it this way. What do you do? I'm a plumber, Fletch said. Yeah, I guess not too many people would like that truck in their driveways. You might lose a few customers. Lose them all. Paint it. I'll pay you and knock the insurance company up later myself. Same blue? Wouldn't work, would it? Nah, you'd be able to read the black right through it. Better paint it black, then. Sons of bitches, even dark red wouldn't work. Even dark green. Ought to have their asses whipped. Paint it black. You want it black? No, I don't want it black. If I wanted a black truck, I would have bought a black truck. You'll look like a hearse. Friggin' hearse. You got the registration? What for? Gotta take it into the registry, report the change in vehicle color. Screw 'em. What? Look, Fletch laid on anger. I'm the victim of a crime. If the fuzz were doing what they're supposed to be doing instead of making us fill out papers all the time, my truck wouldn't have been vandalized. Sounds reasonable. Let them go screw. I'll notify them when I'm good and ready. You want it black, huh? No, but it's going to be black. When do you need it? Right now. I'm late for work right now. You can't have the truck today. No way. Tomorrow morning. Okay, if that's the best you can do. You going to go into the registry? I'm going to work. I'll go into the registry when I get damn good and ready. Okay, I understand. We'll paint the truck. You'll go into the registry. Damn kids, Fletch said. Weirdos. If you get picked up, just don't say where you got the truck painted. Fletch said, screw 'em. Chapter 12. Fletch listened to the old elevator creak and clank as it climbed to the sixth floor. The door to apartment 6A opened. A miniature poodle preceded a woman on a leash. It was immediately obvious the woman was tipsy at 1:30 in the afternoon. While Fletch held the elevator door, she rummaged in her purse for her key. The dog watched Fletch curiously. Apparently satisfied she had her key, the woman slammed the door. Watch your step, Fletch said. The woman tripped anyway. He pushed the L button. They sank slowly.
You the man taking Bart's apartment?
Yes, Fletch said. Name of Fletcher. How could the woman not have heard of the murder next door? Some drunk. Fletch patted the dog.
When did Bart leave, anyway?
Saturday, Fletch said. Sunday. He's using my house in Italy.
Oh,
the woman said. Fletch wondered how far she could walk the dog.
That couldn't be,
she said. What couldn't be?
I saw Bart Tuesday.
You did?
Tuesday night, at the place right up the street, the Bullfinch Pub.
What time? She shrugged. She was tired of the conversation.
Drink time, 6 o'clock.
Are you sure it was Tuesday?
He wore a tweed sports jacket. I knew he hadn't just come from the office. Thought it odd. Pretty girl with him.
What did she look like?
Pretty, young.
The elevator clunked to a stop. Fletch opened the door. Are you sure of this? He asked. Passing him, she said,
I'm in love with Bart.
Thinking, Fletch watched her walk unevenly across the lobby. He caught up to her at the door. He put his hand on the knob to open it.
Did you speak to Bart Tuesday night? No, she said. I hate the son of a bitch.
He trailed her through the door. That's a nice dog you have there.
Oh, that's my love, Mignon. Aren't you Mignon?
On the sidewalk, she extended a gloved hand to Fletch.
I'm Joan Winslow, she said. You must come by sometime for a drink.
Thank you, Fletch said. I will. Chapter 13. The arrogance of the press, Fletch said, standing to shake hands. It was 2:15. Knowing full well Jack Saunders would be late, Fletch had ordered and sipped a vodka martini. Through the window, he had watched the plainclothesman standing in the alley. A day of quickly traveling clouds, sunlight switched on and off in the alley as if someone were taking time exposures of the discomfited cop. There had been no place for him to park his car.
Through the dark window glass of Lockober's, the man he was supposed to be watching was sitting at a white-clothed table, sipping a martini, watching him. Fletch had toyed with the idea of inviting him in for a drink. Jack Saunders said, "Sorry to be a little late. The wife got her eyelashes stuck in the freezer door." Sitting down, Fletch said, "A reporter is always late because he knows there's no story until he gets there. Still drink gin?" Jack ordered a martini. He had not changed much, only more so. His glasses were a little thicker, his sandy hair a little thinner. His belly had let out more than his belt. "Old times," Jack said in a toast, with an E. "To the end of the world," said Fletch. "It'll make a hell of a story." They talked about Jack's new job, where he was living now, their time together on the Chicago Post. They had a second drink. "God, that was funny," Jack was saying. "The time you busted the head of the Internal Revenue Service in Chicago, the Infernal Revenue Service. The guy was as guilty as hell. They had him in court. They couldn't get the evidence on him because his wife had all the evidence, and they couldn't call her to testify because she was his wife, even though they were separated." The newspaper was being very polite about it, Fletch said, following the court in its frustration, as the man Flynn might say. "Journalistic responsibility, Fletch. Journalistic responsibility. Will you never learn?" "Sloppy legwork," Fletch said. "I didn't do anything any junior-grade FBI man couldn't have done." "What did you do, anyway?" "I can't tell you." "Come on, I'm not your boss anymore." "You might be again one day, though." "I hope so." "Come on, we're not in Illinois. The guy's in jail." "Why the hell should I give you ideas? You were reporting the court record as docilely as the rest of the idiot editors."
"Yeah, but when you got the story, I ran it."
"Yes, you did. Of course you did. I'm supposed to be grateful? You won a prize and then made a bloody long speech about team efforts."
"I let you hold the prize. 10 or 15 minutes. I remember handing it to you."
"And I remember you're taking it back." "You're ashamed. You're ashamed of what you did." "I got the story." "You're ashamed of how you got it. That's why you won't tell me."
"I'm a little ashamed."
"How did you do it?" "I poured sugar in the wife's gas tank and followed her home. When her engine died, I stopped to help her. Did the whole bit, fiddling under her hood, pretended to adjust things, told her to try it again."
"That's funny."
"Drove her home. It was 8 o'clock at night. She offered me a drink."
"You entrapped her."
"Is that the word?" "The friendship ripened."
"How was she in bed?"
"Sort of cold."
"Jeez, you'd do anything for a story."
"She had her good points. They weren't far from her chin."
"I'm sure you told her you were a member of the press."
"I think I told her I sold air conditioning units. I don't know how the idea occurred to me, something about the cool breezes from her every orifice."
"But you plugged her in."
Jack's eyes were wet from laughing.
"And plugged her in, and plugged her in, and plugged her in."
"Look, the lady was blackmailing her husband, and therefore he was embezzling from the United States government. The courts couldn't get at her because she was still legally his wife."
"What did she deserve?"
"Yeah, but I still don't know how you did it."
"Well, we took a vacation together, in Nevada. The dear thing was divorced before she knew it."
"I remember the expense account.
Oh, boy, do I remember the expense account. The accounting department did a dance all over my ass, with hiking boots."
"You mean the Chicago Post paid for somebody's divorce?"
"Actually, yes. Well, it freed her as a witness."
Oh, that's funny. If only they knew."
"I listed it properly, legal fees incurred while traveling."
"Geez, we thought you got busted for pot or something. Maybe got caught with your pants down in a casino."
"Don't ask. I told the lady we had to go back to Chicago to get married. Had to get my birth certificate, that sort of thing, you know."
"You actually told her you were going to marry her?"
"Of course. Why else would she get a divorce? I mean, under those circumstances."
"You are a bastard."
"So my father said. Anyway, once the lady realized she was divorced and about to land at O'Hare International Airport in Chicago, she panicked. She envisioned all sorts of men in blue suits waiting for her when she got off the plane. So I convinced her the best thing to do was to give me the evidence, pack her bags, and split immediately."
"Which she did?"
"Which she did. All the evidence, plus a signed deposition, all of which you may remember we published."
"We certainly did." I told her I'd meet her in Acapulco as soon as I found my birth certificate. What happened to her?
I never heard. As far as I know, she's still waiting in Acapulco.
Oh, you're a terrible man. You're a son of a bitch. You're a shit, Fletcher. But you're funny.
It was a pretty good story, Fletch said. Shall we eat?
They dug into their Chateaubriand. Did you see the star this morning? Jack asked.
Nope, sorry.
We gave more space to your story this morning. Ran a picture of the girl.
Thanks.
Had to. Pretty damning evidence they've got on you, Fletch. Your fingerprints were on the murder weapon.
The police gave you that?
Yep.
Trying to build a public case against me, the bastards.
Poor Fletch. As if you never did such a thing yourself. What's the next development to expect?
My confession, but don't hold your breath.
I figure if Flynn hasn't arrested you, he's got a reason.
If you look through the window to your right, you'll see my flat-footed escort.
Oh, yeah. Even paranoids have enemies, I've heard.
Actually, I think I've got the case cracked. It was an impersonal, coincidental frame.
So who did it?
One of two people. Rather not go into it now.
You always did play stories close to the chest, until you had them on paper.
Twists and turns, Jack, twists and turns. Every story has its twists and turns. By the way, do you think you'd let me use your library? There's some people I'd like to look up.
Sure, who?
This guy, Bart Connors, for one. I'm using his apartment.
Don't know much about him. Partner in one of those State Street law firms.
He's taxation or something. Maybe I could come in some afternoon while you're there.
You bet. Mondays and Tuesdays I take off. You'll probably want to come sooner than that.
Yeah. God knows where I'll be next Monday.
I've been to Norfolk Prison, said Jack. It's not bad, as prisons go. Clean. Got a good shop. Overcrowded, of course.
Maybe that's why Flynn hasn't arrested me.
I don't think you should come into the office using the name Fletcher, though. The publisher might resent a murder suspect going through our files.
Okay, what name should I use?
Smith?
Oh, that's a good one.
Jones? I've got it. Brown.
Has a nice ring to it.
I'm not as inventive as you are, Fletch.
How about Jasper Depew Mandeville IV?
That's a good one. Very convincing.
I'll use the name Locke.
John?
Ralph.
Ralph? Somebody's got to be called Ralph.
They both had their coffee black. Jack said, "For some reason, I've hesitated to ask you what you're doing these days. I guess I'm afraid what you might tell me."
"I've gone back to writing about art."
"Oh, yeah, you were doing that in Seattle. Not quite as exciting as investigative reporting."
"It has its moments."
"How can you afford it? I mean, you're not writing for anyone, right?"
"An uncle left me some money." "I see. I am Fletcher finally ripped somebody off. Always knew you would."
"Did the Degrassi story come over the wires?"
"Degrassi?"
"From Italy. Count Clemente Degrassi."
"Oh, yeah. That's a weird one. I don't think we used it. What was the story? He was kidnapped, and then when the ransom wasn't paid, he was murdered, right?"
"Right. I expect to marry his daughter, Angela."
"Oh. Why didn't they pay the ransom?"
"They didn't have the money.
Nothing like it." "A great tragedy. There's only the young wife, the present Countess de Grassi, about 40, and Angela, who's in her early 20s. They haven't got a dime. Ransom was over $4 million.
"Then why was he kidnapped?"
"Somebody got the wrong de Grassi family. They have the title, you know, of falling down palace outside Livorno, and they keep a small apartment at a good address in Rome."
"Pretty horrible story. Maybe we should have run it."
"I don't think so," said Fletch. "It's far away, has nothing to do with Boston. No use in advertising crime."
Jack Saunders paid the bill.
"Nice eating off a newspaper again," Fletch said.
"As a kindness, I guess I should go get that cop off his flat feet. For him, I'll take a taxi home. Otherwise, I'd walk."
"Congratulations," Jack said. "I mean about getting married."
Fletch said, "This is the real thing."
Chapter 14. It would be 9:30 at night in Cagni, Italy. Fletch wandered around the apartment with his coat and tie off. He toured the paintings.
He had evidence from an unreliable witness, Joan Winslow from Apartment 6A, that Bart Connors had been in Boston the night of the murder. Tuesday night. No, he had more than that. Flynn had said there was no evidence from the airlines. Connors had flown out of the country any time between his being seen by Mrs. Sawyer on Saturday night and Tuesday night. Yet yesterday, Wednesday, Andy had seen him in Konya. Should he tell Flynn what the woman in 6A had said? Fletch had worked with the police before. With them, against them, around them. Flynn was pretty good, but it was Fletch's freedom Fletch was fighting for. So far, he'd been entirely too trusting. He'd roused the quail, whether its feathers were wet or not. Fletch checked his watch again and placed a call to his villa in Konya. Hello? Andy? Fletch, what are you doing in Konya? You asked me to come up. That was yesterday. Why did you call here, Fletch? Did you spend the night? Oh, I had car trouble. The Porsche? Bart said it was the diaphragm or something. Bart said? This is the second night, Andy. Yes, the car will be ready in the morning. Andy? Wait until I turn the record player down, Fletch. I can't hear too well. She came back in a few seconds and said, Hello, Fletch, darling. Andy, what are you doing spending the night at my house with Bart Connors? That has no business for you, Fletcher. Just because I marry you has nothing to do with where I spent last night. Listen to me, will you? Is Bart Connors there? Andy hesitated. Of course. Then get out of that house, sneak out, and run down to the hotel or something. But, darling, why? There is some evidence your host has a terrible temper. Temper? Nonsense. He's a kitten. Will you do as I say? I don't think so. We're just beginning dinner. I think you'd better come here, Andy, to Boston. I have to go back to Rome, see what the Grand Countess is doing. The Countess is here.
Where?
In Boston. Sylvia is here.
The bitch.
Why don't you fly from Genoa?
I can't believe you, Fletch. This is something you're putting on for jealousy. I'm not jealous of the people you spend time with.
Andy, you're not listening.
No, and I'm not going to. I don't know why you called here anyway. I'm supposed to be in Rome.
To talk to Bart Connors.
Then talk to him.
Andy, after I talk to Connors, please come back on the phone. She said, I'll get him. The pause was interminable. Hello, Mr. Fletcher? Mr. Connors, everything all right at the villa? Your girlfriend dropped in yesterday. She'd lost a necklace here. We put on quite a search for it. What's wrong with the car?
What car?
The Porsche. It's quite a long drive to Rome, isn't it? When did you arrive in Konya?
Yesterday?
Wednesday?
Yes, that's right.
I thought you were going out on Sunday.
My plans got mixed up. The person I thought was coming with me couldn't make it.
You waited for her?
My powers of persuasion were not adequate to the task. Good thing I didn't become a trial lawyer.
You flew through New York?
Montreal.
Why Montreal? Is that better?
I had a late business dinner there.
It's very nice of you to call, Mr. Fletcher, but it's sort of expensive for a chat. I hope you called collect on your phone.
And Ruth said she wouldn't go with you?
What?
Ruth. She said she wouldn't go with you to Konya.
Who's Ruth?
The girl you were trying to take to Konya with you.
I don't understand you, Mr. Fletcher.
Mr. Connors, I think you'd better think of coming back to Boston.
What?
A young woman was murdered in your apartment Tuesday night. I found the body.
What are you talking about?
Her name was Ruth Fryer.
I don't know anyone named Ruth Pryor.
Fryer. She was hit over the head with a whiskey bottle.
Am I crazy or am I not understanding you?
A girl named Ruth Fryer was killed in your apartment Tuesday night.
Did you do it?
Mr. Connors, it appears you are a suspect in a murder case.
I am not. I'm in Italy.
You were in Boston at the time of the murder.
I had nothing to do with it, and I'm going to have nothing to do with it. No one could have gotten into that apartment. You're the only one who has a key.
And Mrs. Sawyer.
And Mrs. Sawyer, my key is here. Is this some kind of a joke?
You were seen in Boston on Tuesday night, Mr. Connors.
I stayed at the Parker house Monday night. I had already moved out of the apartment and didn't want to mess it up. Look, Fletcher, I don't know what the hell you're saying. Was there any damage to the apartment itself?
No.
I have nothing to do with this. I don't know anyone named Ruth Fryer. And who the hell are you to question me anyway?
Another suspect in the same murder case.
Well, don't lay it off on me, pal. I'm sorry somebody's dead, and I'm sorry somebody's dead in my apartment, but I don't know anything about it.
You're a kitten.
What?
Will you let me talk to Andy again?
If I came running back, then I'd be involved. The newspapers would question me. I'm a lawyer in Boston, Fletcher. I can't afford that. Jesus Christ, did you kill somebody in my apartment?
No, I didn't.
Whom have the police questioned so far?
Me.
Whom else?
Me.
Fletcher, why don't you move out of my apartment?
No, I'm not going to do that.
I'll call the law firm. Somebody's going to protect my interest.
I thought you didn't have an interest.
I don't... Jesus, you've ruined my dinner.
Do you have another bottle of gin somewhere?
Yeah, in the lower cupboard in the pantry. It's Swiss.
This is a terrible thing to happen. I'm staying away from it.
Okay, let me talk to Andy.
Connors exhaled into the mouthpiece.
Then the line went dead. He had hung up.
If Fletch had accomplished nothing else, he had ruined their evening together.
Pan American Airways, Miss Fletcher speaking.
What?
Pan American Airways, Miss Fletcher speaking.
Your name is Fletcher?
Yes, sir.
This is Ralph Locke.
Yes, Mr. Locke.
Miss Fletcher, I'd like to fly from Montreal to Genoa, Italy, late Tuesday night. Is that possible?
One moment, sir. I'll check.
It was scarcely a moment.
TWA's flight 805 leaves Montreal at 11 p.m. Tuesday evening with a connection in Paris for Genoa, Italy.
What's your first name?
Linda, sir.
Linda Fletcher?
You were never married to someone named Irwin Maurice Fletcher, were you?
No, sir.
You didn't sound familiar.
How long does it take to fly to Montreal from Boston?
About 40 minutes, actual flying time, sir. Eastern has a flight at 8 p.m., which would give you plenty of time.
Is there a later flight?
Delta flies to Montreal at 9:30 p.m. That would still give you plenty of time.
Talking to her, as obviously she was pushing buttons on a computer console, was like talking to someone in space. A short delay preceded her every answer.
Should I make these reservations for you, Mr. Locke?
Perhaps later. I'll call back.
Where are you from, Miss Fletcher?
Columbus, Ohio, sir.
Ohio's a nice place, Fletch said. I've never been there.
Fletch shaved, showered, and put on a fresh shirt. It was almost 6 o'clock. At 6:30, the Countess was going to call the police on him if he didn't meet her in the Ritz bar. Instead, the police called him. Necktie over his shoulders, he answered the bedroom phone.
How are you today, Mr. Fletcher?
Ah, Flynn, I wanted to talk to you.
Did you want to confess by any chance?
No, that wasn't what I was thinking.
Sorry if I appear to be ignoring you, but a city councilwoman was murdered in a bath this morning, and since it's a politically sensitive case, I've been assigned to it. I've never held with taking baths in the morning anyway, but when you're in politics, God knows how many baths a day you need.
What was she killed with?
The murder weapon. A nice pick, Mr. Fletcher.
Messy.
Aye, it was that. She took the first thrust in the throat, which seems peculiarly appropriate. I mean, it makes it seem far more the political crime, doesn't it?
I wouldn't like your job, Flynn.
It has its downs. She was a chubby old thing.
Inspector, I've discovered a few things which might be of interest to you.
Have you indeed?
The woman in the next apartment, 6A, named Joan Winslow, says she saw Bart Connors in Boston Tuesday night at about 6 o'clock, having a drink up the street at the Bullfinch pub with an attractive young woman.
Now that's interesting. We'll talk with her.
I suspect she's not too reliable a witness, but I've talked with Bart Connors in Italy.
Have you? And now that you've talked with him, will he stay in Italy?
Apparently, he refuses to come back.
Small wonder. It's not his coming this direction I worry about. We have an extradition agreement with Italy, whereas we don't with one or two other countries he might find attractive.
He says he flew to Genoa through Montreal late Tuesday night.
We know. The 9:30 Delta flight 770 to Montreal. The 11 o'clock Transworld Airlines flight 805 to Paris.
He had plenty of time to do murder here.
Yes, he did.
But the important thing is that he said the reason for his delay in departure by 2 or 3 days was that he was trying to talk a girl, a specific girl, into going to Italy with him.
But Ruth Fryer wasn't in Boston until Monday night. He may have been waiting for her.
He may have been. Bought her a drink up the street, brought her back here for further persuasion, lost his temper, and bashed her.
It sounds very reasonable.
I would guess he's been through a tough time emotionally lately.
There's no way of knowing that. Every time I've made guesses as to what goes on between a married couple, I've been wrong, even when they're divorcing.
Anyway, at least your theories in defense of yourself are becoming fuller, more cogent, if you know what I mean. I'm pleased to see, for example, you're beginning to accept the idea that someone else hit Ruth Fryer over the head with a bottle, not that she bopped herself and put the bottle back carefully on the tray across the room before expiring.
You'll talk to the Winslow woman?
We will. In the meantime, we have the autopsy report on the Fryer girl. She was killed between 8 and 9 o'clock Tuesday night. The airport is 10 minutes away. Connor's flight was at 9:30.
It is 10 minutes away. When the Boston police are succeeding at their traffic duty. She'd had about 3 drinks of alcohol in the preceding 3 or 4 hours. At the Bullfinch pub. That can't be determined. Despite her naked condition, she had not had sexual relations with a male in the preceding 24 hours.
Of course not. She refused him.
Mr. Fletcher, would a man of Mr. Connor's age and experience in this advanced age murder a girl because she refused his sexual advances?
Certainly, as you said, if he'd had enough to drink.
I would think. Even with liquor, he'd have to have a deep-seated psychological problem to do in a young lady who said no.
How do we know he hasn't?
I'll grant you, Mr. Fletcher, there is some evidence against your landlord. And under the circumstances, I don't even perceive you're trying to pin it on him as being particularly ignoble.
I have the advantage, Flynn. I know I'm not the murderer. I'm trying to find out who is.
However, the evidence against yourself is a great deal stronger. Ruth Fryer was the ground hostess for first-class passengers of Transworld Airlines Flight 529 from Rome Tuesday. Your ground hostess. Several hours later, after having been dressed for the evening, she's found murdered in your apartment. Your fingerprints were on the murder weapon.
Okay, Flynn, what can I say?
You can confess, Mr. Fletcher, and let me get on with the city councilwoman's murder.
Person, Inspector.
What's that?
Council person. City council person.
Fat lot of good the distinction will do her now. She's been slain in the tub.
Will you confess, lad?
Of course not. Do you still think the murder's an accidental and impersonal coincidence? Is that still your lame stand?
Yes.
Grover's of the fixed opinion we should arrest you and charge you with murder before you do harm to someone else.
But you're not going to.
I'm inclining very much that way. Did you ever find that girl who gave me directions in that square Tuesday night? The square with the Citgo sign?
Of course not. We haven't even looked. We'd have to interview the entire female population at Boston University, and that still wouldn't cover all the young women who might be in Kenmore Square at that time of night. There are nightclubs there.
Oh, it's no good, lad. The evidence is piled up. I doubt we'll ever get more.
I hope not.
It's not precisely warm of me to ask you to confess by telephone, but there is this other murder.
Will you stop giving the evidence you have to the newspapers? You're convicting me.
Ach, that. Well, that puts as much pressure on me as it does on you.
Not quite, Inspector, not quite.
Well, I'll leave it alone for a while. Give you time to think. Get a lawyer. I have a natural instinct to not do precisely what Grover tells me to do. You might even get a psychiatrist.
Why a psychiatrist?
It's your seeming innocence that puzzles me.